Welcome to the Alien Wellness Think Tank podcast series. The Think Tank is an emergency medicine organization led by residents for residents to improve the culture of wellness during residency training. Take a listen to our conversations with our wellness strategists and mentors.
I'm Matt Malamed. I'm from the Wellness Think Tank in Academic Life and Emergency Medicine. Today we have KK Moody. She's did her med school at Nova Southeastern, did her residency at Einstein Medical Center. She used to be president of Tennessee ASEP and now is on the board of the Washington ASEP and started EM Docs. And then we have two lovely residents with us as well. Layla, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Hi, I'm Layla. I'm a first-year resident in emergency medicine at McMaster, which is in Hamilton, Canada.
Hey, I'm John. I'm a second-year resident down in San Antonio at UT Health.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today. And KK, thank you so much for joining us. This is awesome. I use EM Docs, and I'm sure everybody else in this group right now uses EM Docs. And I found it after residency and truly, truly love it. So obviously, you know, probably everyone's questions always is, why'd you start it in the first place?
Well, I was a tortured resident and I needed support, right? Just like everybody else.
Yeah.
Facebook was just starting to have the groups, and I had kind of been trying to figure out a way to make a difference, because just like you guys, going through residency, I'm starting to see all the things that were wrong with medicine that was frustrating me. And so I started going to leadership and advocacy conference every year and advocating with the congressman. And at first I thought, oh, this is it, to be able to make a difference. But then after going back a few years, I thought, they're just not listening. Things aren't getting better, at least not fast enough for us, right? We're ER doctors. We want to fix it. We want to fix it now. Done.
Exactly.
So then I thought, fine, I'll just run for Congress myself. I'll just go fix it myself. And then I looked into that, and I went to the AMA campaign school and candidates workshop. And when I got there, it wasn't quite the right way to do it, I guess, for me personally. I hope that other doctors will run for Congress, but it just felt like everything they were talking about was how to run a campaign and how to raise money and how to get yourself elected. But I thought, well, that I don't want to spend all of my time doing fundraising. I want to make a difference. And where does that part come in? And it just didn't feel like quite the right fit for me. And so I was just brainstorming like crazy, trying to figure out how can I bring us all together to find ways that leaders can arise. And if we all realize that we're experiencing the same frustrations, surely someone smarter than me will rise up and make a difference. So just to be able to support each other, mainly just the joys and challenges of practicing. In residency, it's painful and it's awful. You're working nights and weekends and holidays. And when you graduate, it gets better because you're working fewer hours, but you're still working nights, weekends, and holidays. And you've still got the patients that are sometimes wonderful and sometimes not so wonderful. And then you've got the administrative things that are frustrating, that are out of our control. And you're supposed to be going faster, 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 but you can't get the radiologist to read faster, and you can't get the labs. And where's that urine? And why don't we have the urine in room 7? And you guys know what I'm talking about. This is your life,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's just so many things that are just so frustrating. And so I felt like at least if we can all come together, that we can at least feel better about it. When I was going to leadership and advocacy, I was starting to make a lot of friends around the country. And for some reason, just coming together once or twice a year with those people helped me not to want to put my head through the wall at 4 a.m. when I had this psychiatric patient threatening to kill me and my whole family. Because I was like, yeah, we just had this conversation. Help is on the way. There's good people that are working on it. We're, you know, it's being addressed. Help is coming. Help is on the way. And it would just sort of, for me, every time I would come home from leadership and advocacy conference, talking to all my friends that were in other states, it was encouraging to me that I'm not the only one. It's not me. It's going to get better. We are working on it. It just helped to know that I wasn't the only one. And really, when I put EM Docs together, it was kind of like to bring those people in a forum where we could talk all the time. I never in my wildest dreams thought that it would be it's like 17,500 doctors all over the country and all over, there's other countries too. And I had no idea it would get that big. I just put it together to try to find ways that we could support each other, the folks that I was seeing a couple of times a year. And the rest of it, it just sort of evolved. It became its own thing. And I can't believe that it's now people are using it for so many different things. I mean, some people, it's all about the wellness and it's about showing their hiking pictures and their dogs and their families and look what my kid did. And that's great. And then some people are sharing cases and, well, it's 4 a.m. and here's a CKG. What am I missing? And, you know, here's this new article. What do you think about this? Or who's using nebulized lidocaine? And it's evolved into so many different things for different people. And I think honestly, it means something different for each person that's using it. But initially I just put it together because I needed support. And then I realized everybody else did too.
Did you feel like you got that support initially? Like how long ago did you actually start it? I don't remember when it initially got started.
Well, I wrote about it in an article. I think that article that I published in ASAP Now must have been about 2012, maybe. Wrote about it in an ASAP Now article. The article was entitled something like Parenting and Practice in Emergency Medicine or something. But it was a long, long time ago. I met someone at a reception at Leadership and Advocacy, and I'm just chatting it up with this person. I had no idea who it was. Turns out he was one of the editors-in-chief of ASAP Now. And I was like, oh, because he said, would you be willing to write an article? Because I was just talking about the challenges of trying to be a mother and a resident at the same time. My husband and I were both residents. And he was asking me all these questions. Well, how do you do this and how do you do that? And I was like, well, okay, so I order my food online. I have a nanny. I do this. I do that. And I started talking about all the ways that I was sort of this balancing act. I've got 5 kids and 2 residents at the same, you know, my husband and I were both residents. And so he said, would you be willing to write an article? Sure. I mean, I banged it out in 20 minutes as soon as I got home because it was exactly everything I knew. I didn't even have to think. All I had to do was correct the grammar. But from that, as I was writing that article, I was sort of brainstorming of ways that I could support us all. And at that time, I said, I'm going to make a support group of resident parents. And I did. I made that group, but groups weren't really a thing yet very much on Facebook. And so that group still exists, but there's only like 80 people because when I started it, I didn't really know how to have the settings where people could put their friends and their friends and their friends, and people didn't know about groups yet either. So it kind of just didn't go anywhere. But then I want to say it was like March or April of maybe 2013 that I put EM Docs together because I wanted to include everybody, even people that were parents or weren't parents, male, female. I mean, all of us have the same struggles. So that's when I just sort of made it generic and said EM Docs and put it out there. And then it really took off when, do you guys know Marco Coppola? He's real involved with ASAP and council and just all around great guy. He's from Texas, actually, military guy. And he knows everybody. Like Marco knows everybody. And so in one day, Marco put like 250 of his friends that were all ER doctors across the country on it. And then they started putting their friends and their friends in there. And then it just exploded. And so it just every day there's hundreds of people that we're having to go through and verify, to make sure they're doctors. And every once in a while, somebody slips through. And then we have somebody that, you know, is a nurse practitioner or a PA. And then they'll post and somebody will send me a comment like, so-and-so is a nurse practitioner at my hospital. Oh, sorry. So I'll take them out.
Are you happy with the way it's evolved? Do you want it to evolve into anything else from there? Or are you happy the way it's been progressing on its own so far?
Well, I am happy with the way it's progressing. I think it's phenomenally more than I expected it to be. There have been so many people that have sent me private messages, people of all ages and all levels, and have said, you know, this saved my life. And I'm like, oh, what? I mean, it's not me. It's sort of collectively, we have been able to support people that were really struggling. And I don't think any of us really feel the full gravity of what it means, of what we individually, each of us, are giving to each other by supporting one another. And so in that regard, absolutely, it has gone beyond my expectation. Of course, there are challenges. I mean, with anything on social media, there's always people that enjoy fighting. And that's my biggest challenge, is when somebody is being mean to someone else, and, you know, or when people start putting hot topics on there and people disagree. And it's great to be able to debate it and disagree. Disagreements are good because we don't want to be closed-minded. We want to be able to hear each other's differing opinions. I mean, I feel like I've grown a lot from hearing all sides on different issues that I maybe never even thought of before. And I think that's a really good thing. The thing that I cringe and I try to get people to not do is be mean to each other, you know, because there's enough of that in our work. There's enough patients calling us names and, you know, unrealistic expectations. So we don't need to have those unrealistic expectations and, you know, nastiness towards each other. We need to encourage and be thankful to each other and realize that even if somebody says something nasty or mean, maybe that person's grumpy because they just did four night shifts and they just woke up and they just want to relax and they pull up EM docs and then maybe they respond to something without fully filtering at first because they're tired. So, I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, I was grumpy to my kids today. One of them said something to me and I sort of responded a little bit more grumpy than I should have. And then I was like, you know what? I just am post nights and I'm so tired. I did 2 days and then three nights and then two off and then another day and then three more nights. And today I'm grumpy. So we just have to be careful not to post on a professional forum with 17,500 of our colleagues when we're grumpy. You know, our families love us. And if we say something grumpy, then we can say, sorry, I was grumpy. And they know that we're post night shift. But if when people put things out there on social media, it can really magnify and come back to bite them later. So I try to help and encourage people to think before they post something. So, but to answer your question, yes, it is everything that I wanted and more. And as far as where I want it to head, I would really like to see people utilizing it for research. It's the perfect place. We've already gathered that many doctors. I mean, it's super easy to make a poll and qualitative, subjective questions. I mean, we can't obviously do clinical research, but we could do a lot of opinion polls, especially about wellness and about those types of things that don't require a lot of numbers, but a lot of opinions and a lot of, you know, how are you feeling? Whatever. I mean, there's ways that we could have IRB approved research that we could put polls on EM docs and they could be publishable for residents if there's an interest. I would like to see that being utilized.
Any residents approached you to do something like that?
Yes, some have, but I haven't seen it utilized very much yet.
Okay, well, hopefully this will spur some people to do that. Along those lines, you know, we always talk about wellness and burnout amongst ourselves. We're like, hey, we should get better sleep. We should work out. We should eat healthy and figure out a way to deal with the stressors of our job and make sure that we're doing well by ourselves. Have you ever taken either an idea off the group, or have you ever taken something that and applied it towards the institution or the administrative level and made a change there, right? Had them make something that affects everybody, even within the whole hospital, not just, for example, your ED or your subset of like night shift people.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things is saying no when it's appropriate. I encourage everyone to do that. I think it's empowering all of us to say no a little bit more when there's unrealistic expectations from administration. I think a lot of us are realizing we're all in this together and they can't fire all of us. And being able to say, no, that's not okay. And advocating for our patients and advocating with our administrators when it really makes a difference for the patients and for us, because ultimately if our souls are crushed and we're committing suicide and, you know, we're quitting and getting side gigs and then getting out of medicine altogether because we're so burned out, that affects our patients too. So what affects us ultimately affects our patients. And so, I mean, there's been several things. One is just sort of making guidelines for prescribing opiates. I've been working on that for years. Even like when I was a resident, I remember having an argument or two with my attendings when I would refuse to write opiates for minor things. And they would say, well, don't you think blah, blah, blah? And I said, yes, I do think they have pain. And I also know that Tylenol and Motrin are effective medications and they're safe and they're not addictive. And there's ways that we can treat pain without addicting all of these people who are going to have a problem later. And nobody wanted to listen at that time. But we kept pushing. And I think EM docs also sort of knowledge translation is quicker. And we're all realizing I've seen an evolution of how people are treating pain in new ways. We're using ultrasound, nerve blocks, and Sono EM. And there's all these folks that are ultrasound trained now that have their podcast and being able to spread the message that, you know, we can do IV lidocaine for renal colic, and we can use nebulized lidocaine for sphenopalatine block for headaches. And even somebody used it for trigeminal neuralgia and the Ferris technique for shoulder dislocation without sedation. I mean, there's all these ways that I've changed some of my practice based upon what people have said. And then I've taken it to our hospital and said, let's do this. Let's try to give fewer opiates. And when I was in Tennessee, our board for Tennessee ASAP put together guidelines for opiate prescribing. And we took those guidelines that we made for the state, and then we took it to the Tennessee Medical Association. So that's all of the specialties. And the Tennessee Medical Association put their stamp of approval. The Emergency Nursing Association, we presented to them their stamp of approval. Then we took it to our local medical executive committee for each hospital in our network. And so, yes, I guess is the short answer to your question of, have I taken things from EM Docs and sort of done something locally for it?
If a resident or an attending at an institution wanted to do that, how should they start, for example?
So the CDC has opiate prescribing guidelines. Those came about, I think, March of 2016 or March of 2017. But I remember it was in March because we'd done our guidelines just prior to the CDC coming out with their guidelines. And they're kind of similar, but ours were specific for emergency medicine and theirs was more broad for the community for all the specialties. So you can look on the CDC for their guidelines. I'm happy to email our guidelines to anyone, but Washington State actually had their guidelines first, I think, as far as ASAP, sort of the emergency medicine. I think Washington might have been some of the first to do the prescribing guidelines. But there's something really good called ALTO, A-L-T-O, Alternatives to Opioids is what the A-L-T-O stands for. New Jersey was one of the first places to start to put that. Colorado has followed. They're also doing sort of alternatives to opiates. They have specific guidelines for headache and for back pain, and they have written guidelines, which are amazing. So I got a hold of Colorado ASAP and had them send us their guidelines. And so I've got them stuck up on our board to try to encourage the other physicians that I'm working with locally to sort of follow these guidelines. And before, I mean, we're not completely opioid free. Neither is the opioid free ED. I talked to them and they're not completely opioid free. It's just that they have multiple steps, protocol steps that they can think of to jog their memory of, oh yeah, well, we can do this first. Okay, that doesn't work. Here's step two. Here's third line. Here's fourth line. And then way down at the bottom, if nothing works, then opioids if they need it. But all those guidelines are written up. So it's definitely available.
And I'm sure we've all been there. We've all had that patient who goes, no, I want Percocet. I'm not leaving until I get my Percocet. No, I want my Dilaudid. I'm not leaving until I get it. Mm-hmm. And then that causes your undue, you're trying to take care of the rest of the other patients that are in the ED. You're trying to get through the day. You're trying to do everything else that you're trying to do. Now you have a difficult patient that you're dealing with that's probably affecting your wellness to begin with.
Absolutely.
Has that kind of led to better interactions with them? And like, have they left accepting it, or are you still facing challenges with that?
So it's a multi-step, very complicated layering process. So there's no easy yes or no to this answer. And it's interesting. I've seen the beginnings of it being implemented in Tennessee, and then I moved to Washington State, and now I'm sort of fast forwarding into the future 5 to 7 years, because Washington State started it 5 to 7 years ago. I don't remember exactly what year it was, but it was at least 5 years ago when they started it. Tennessee is just now starting it. And I'm sure all the other states are kind of in between there somewhere. So it's an interesting perspective to see the difference. Number one, people are still coming in demanding Dilaudid, and they're still angry when they don't get it. However, here in Washington, there's been such an acceptance of us saying no, and the reasons, that administration is a little bit more behind us. So just knowing that that angst that you feel when there's a patient calling administration and yelling and saying you're a terrible doctor and you don't care and you won't give me my Dilaudid and I'm in horrific pain, blah, blah, blah. You know, in the beginnings, there's that fear that the CEO is going to walk down to your ER and go, why are you such a mean person? Kind of like in 1996 when Big Pharma, when, you know, Purdue Pharma was saying, you're a bad doctor, you're a mean doctor, you know, you're not giving our drugs. And of course, their whole reason was because they were marketing their drug. But everybody's bought into it for so long. And now with the whole press gainy thing, the CEOs want to get paid. And so there have been times when CEOs have walked down to the ER and said, you need to just give them their drugs. That happened to me once.
Really?
And I said, absolutely not. No. And that's what I'm talking about, saying no. If that CEO wants to write them for narcotics, get their medical license out and write their, oh, wait, you don't have one? Oh, I'm doing what's best in the interest of the patient, and I'm not going to be bullied into writing narcotics when it's not appropriate. And so that's what I'm talking about when I say, as we all come together, to say no when appropriate. If that person has a, you know, urinary tract infection or a minor abrasion on their knee, they don't need Dilaudid. And if we give it, we are causing harm.
So, for example, if a resident wanted to make that opioid change in their ED, they go to their attending or their APD or their PD and say, hey, listen, I really have a great project we can work on and I would like to make these changes. What would be a good first step for them? It would be, for example, going to the Alternative to Opioids website and the CDC website.
There is the ASAP and get their guidelines. Okay. And Colorado ASAP and get their guidelines. Because they both have written guidelines. And when you can present something that's formal and written and someone else is using this, that's a good start. And also the CDC guidelines. But also recognize and look up and ask the New Jersey and Colorado folks about Alto is being introduced as a bill in Congress. So this is what's coming. And so to be able to say this is legitimized at every level, and this is the future, we need to get ahead of the curve and we need to do the right thing for our patients.
Did you feel better leaving work after you started going down this pathway?
Absolutely. I mean, I always did that. I always refused narcotics, even when I was being told as a resident to give them inappropriately, because that was everyone's training. They'd been trained that way. They were telling me what they thought was correct, but there was just something I knew wasn't right about it. So I feel better that it is going in this direction because I feel like now I'm not an outlier. So in that way, I feel more supported.
Layla, do you guys have a different experience in Canada or do you guys deal with this much where you are? Or
yeah, actually, especially where I am in Hamilton, there was quite a problem with the number of, you know, opiate-related death and opiate-related people getting addicted and the number of people coming into the emergency department just because of the type of social, you know, the population around Hamilton. So I think there was quite a big shift probably just before I started residency. I was seeing it a lot during medical school, patients coming in asking for narcotics. And I think I might have been like in the first group of residents and medical students seeing that the physicians were just saying no and saying, look, this is not going to help you. We can offer you Tylenol and Advil. So I think I might have just been part of that cohort that the first line is always no, unless of course there's reasons for, you know, cancer pain and those types of legitimate reasons. But I think I just grew into the culture of knowing that it's not the best first line option, but definitely there's still always those patients that say, I want my Dilaudid and this is the dose that I want. And this is how many pills that I want. And it's just nice having those good role models that are already saying, you know, this is not the way to go. And you know, then you don't feel as bad about it because you know that you're doing the right thing in the end for your patients. And hopefully they'll understand one day.
Totally. Are they mean to you? Are they demandingly mean to you? Because I think of Canadians as being just super nice. So I'm trying to figure out how mean can they be when they're seeking of opioids and narcotics.
A broad spectrum of patients. And like most Canadians are quite nice, but there's always, you know, the few.
I picture them being like, give me some Dilaudid. And they go, and you go, no. And they're like, well, thank you so much for considering.
Some of those, but there are some at the other end of the spectrum as well.
In New York, they're just like, give me some Dilaudid as they throw their applesauce and tuna sandwich at me.
Yeah.
It's usually the standard that I get. John, do you guys have a different experience? Are you guys doing anything in your ED with regard to changes like that?
I love that y'all have a structured protocol like that. We don't in our hospital. And I think it'd be really helpful to be able to point to a document like that and say, hey, here's our structured plan that we already have in place before the patient hits the door. I love that. I think it's a great idea for us to implement.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. So you see, like the way I look at this is we deal with enough difficult patients to begin with. And if we can, one, find a way to offer our patients a better alternative, especially in the way we're going, and hopefully get that message out, I think we'll inevitably have better patient interaction and better patient care. And then from there, we can walk home or go home with less of a worry that somebody may want to come after us because they think we still take narcotics home for some weird reason, or they may want to come after us because we didn't give them pain medication. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's a concern for a lot of people. You're trying to do the best for your patient, but on the flip side, they don't realize that and they are desperately seeking, or they may be abusing narcotics or something else may be going on. And that's what stirs them to do something that may be really detrimental to you or themselves. So I think it's a nice twist. You take a patient care system where we're trying to do better for our patient, but on the flip side, we're also hopefully going to better ourselves with regards to our wellness. It's a better patient interaction, and we can walk away and say, listen, I really did well for my patient and well for myself. It's less of a worry on my end. And I think that's some cool ideas that came out of the group from there. That's fantastic. KK, do you have any other ideas of anything else that you'd think would help? Just general ideas that you may have implemented or somebody else may have implemented outside of narcotics or opioid prescribing? Or
when I first got out of residency, I took a position as a medical director of an ER. I know that's crazy, but it was a small ED. There were 5 doctors, 2 hospitalists. It wasn't that big. And so it was pretty manageable, but there was a couple of doctors that, one in particular, that didn't get along with the hospitalist. And so there's so much, we interact with the hospitalist so much that it's important to have those relationships to be good. Otherwise, every time you get on the phone, it's a strain. So I kept getting complaints from both sides and this. And so finally I said, okay, guys, we're going to have a barbecue at my house. So I think I thought, you know, if we're sitting on the porch with a beverage and just talking about each other's children and can see each other as humans rather than just that person on the phone who's refusing admission or that person on the phone who's making me admit someone, I thought we would be able to have an interaction that was a little bit better. I sort of extended that on EM Docs, and I've encouraged people to do that locally. I'm not sure if they're doing it or not, but I think more than anything, just being able to get outside together, just to have spontaneous meetups where nobody has to buy the food, where everybody just says, okay, I'll meet you at the park at 7 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon, bring the kids, bring the dogs, see you there. Just show up. You know, I'll wear the color red. Everybody wear, you know, whatever. Wear something where we can find each other. And I don't know. I think there's something magical about really gathering socially and not necessarily in a bar where you have to yell and not hear each other, but somewhere outdoors in nature in that healing environment. I just think getting together.
You know, it's funny. This is not planned in any sense of the word, because literally my next question was going to be about your wellness ranch. You led perfectly into it for us. I've been following this progression and I've been really tempted to join. So tell us about your wellness ranch. Tell us where this thought, besides, you know, get together and let's have some drinks, chill and have a great time. Where did this thought come from and where do you want it to go?
So it came from my first month out of residency. So I lived in this tiny little cooped up 2-bedroom apartment in the city when I was a resident. I lived in Philadelphia, just outside of Philadelphia. And after I graduated, of course, there were like, you know, 2 windows in the living room. That it was just tiny and no nature. And of course, the days were short because it was Northeast. And anyway, it was kind of miserable. Everything about residency, except all my friends, was kind of painful. I'm sure you guys can relate. But when I graduated, I bought 33 acres, a farm. The backyard was a mountain and the front yard was an open rolling pasture with a creek that ran through it and big long white fence. I put horses in the pasture and Oh my God, I just felt like I could exhale finally. I just, after a shift, even sometimes when I got home at midnight, I would just walk out to the barn and just sit on the fence and pet the horses and listen to the creek. And every day off, I would just get up and just walk down the hill and sit at the barn and pet the horses. And I got chickens and I got all these farm animals, and I would just watch them interact. And it would just remind me of human interactions. And I felt like I was learning so much about pecking order from the chickens, you know, and who's the boss of the horses and how do they interact with each other. Just so much learning and healing that went on. I felt like it was just such a healing time to go from that tiny apartment to that open green space. Hearing the wind in the trees was just like magic. Like all the stress was just sort of flowing down that creek. So I wanted to share that. So I started thinking about, well, maybe I'll make a community garden for all the docs that I'm working with so that everybody could kind of enjoy this. And I started thinking, how can I share this with all my colleagues? And then with EM Docs, I started really thinking about finding ways to share it. And of course, my husband said, well, you know, this is kind of our private family place. I don't really want all these strangers on here. I'm an extrovert. He's an introvert. It's like, no, I don't want all these people on, you know, I just want to be able to go to the barn and be alone. So that's when I started dreaming about buying a separate place that could be for all of us. And so it took me a while, but eventually that's what I did.
That's awesome. So where is the Wellness Ranch, or where is it going to be once it goes live?
Well, it is live. It's a
oh,
thing. It's
live. Oh, there you go.
I got the keys on March 22nd. So it is a thing. It is amazing. It's 171 Baker Road. It's about 4 minutes to Packwood and about 15 minutes to Randall. But Packwood is basically the kind of a base station where everybody camps out if they're hiking Rainier. It's mm-hmm. just right there. So there's lots of VRBOs and lots of little cottages and, you know, places to stay, lodging for the folks that are wilderness types that want to come and backpack and camp out.
Wow. So what's your dream with regards to having people come there? Do you want people to get, I remember seeing some posts, but I don't remember totally offhand. Your inevitability, is it, I saw something about maybe doing some cabins or something else. Are you going to have a petting zoo? Obviously, that's the first thing I would think of.
I can't help myself. I'll have to populate it with animals. I just can't help myself. So I'm sure there will be. I have two horses and a miniature donkey that I'm getting ready to buy a trailer and so that I can take them out there. But I have to kind of repopulate. I got rid of a lot of my animals when we moved. So I'm in the process of repopulating. I've got some chickens that a friend is raising until they're big enough. I'm kind of busy right now and I don't have a great coop yet, but I have one at the Wellness Ranch. So honestly, I see this place evolving kind of like EM Docs did. It will become whatever we need it to become, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's a big enough space that we can kind of do whatever we decide. It's in a county where they allow a lot of renovation. There's some, you know, some counties in Washington are very restrictive on what you can build and what you can't. But fortunately, the county, Lewis County, is really good. They're all about tourism anyway. And so I think I'll be able to build what I want. But it'll take a little while. I've got to get all the permits to do everything. But at this point, it's 70 acres. It's got 1,200 feet of Cowlitz River, salmon fishing. It's clear. The water is straight off Mount Rainier. And then it has a creek that runs off the other mountain. So like the Cowlitz River is one boundary and then the creek is another boundary. It's bordered on two sections with water running, healing, cascading. I'm in love. So right where they come together, where the creek meets the river, that's my magical spot.
Do you ever think that this is where you'd be at? This is the point where you'd have a wellness ranch?
I journaled about this, actually. I can remember specifically, I was on a plane journaling about this, and I showed it to a couple of people, and they were like, are you crazy? This would never work. But at the time, it was like a med spa, like with kind of a farm around it, but a med spa. And this is before med spas were a thing. But I wanted to have massage therapy and sort of all the creature comforts, but the outdoors. And I remember when I showed it to people, everybody was like, nobody would do that. But then as I was going through, when I would go to conferences and I would sit there in my suit, cold, layering up in a hotel room that cost me $350 a night, even more, I was like, I have to do this. I don't want to do CME in a cold hotel in a town that's, you know, maybe it's a nice city, but I'll never see it because I can only get so many days off, and I go and I sit in the cold. I might as well be in a closed room anywhere because I'm not enjoying this. It's awful. It's boring. And I want to go zip line and I want to walk through the woods, and we can talk about CHF around the campfire. So I was recently at in Costa Rica with Ben Mattingly, has his Wild Med Adventures. And I went there to be a speaker, and it was amazing because when I did my lecture, I was sitting on the floor barefoot. Half the people that were listening to the lecture were in their swimsuits with a towel wrapped around them. And then the next night we had another lecture poolside, like they had the PowerPoint up on a sheet that was hung poolside. I was in the pool swimming around listening to a malaria lecture. I'm like, now this is what I'm talking about.
Hearing you talk about it and talk about it so passionately, I think that's what we need. You know, we really need people who don't just put their head down, do their shift, go home, and then rinse, repeat for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Oh, I do plenty of that too, believe me.
We're all hard workers, but we need those people who look in and go, why am I just working myself to the bare end? And then come 20 years down the line from now, I look back and I say, well, did I, besides the medicine that I did, and hopefully I treated people well, and hopefully I took care of somebody, maybe I even saved somebody's life, for example.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of rewards.
Sure, but this is really where I think these people like yourself and others who really look and go, let me make a difference for my coworkers and my colleagues and my friends. Let's find a way to make this better. Because I think
people can make a difference for each other. And I figured if I make a place, they'll come together and they'll make it better. It's not me. It's all of us helping each other.
There you go. Isn't it like The League of Your Own, where they say, build it, if you build it, they will come. Right? I think it's that movie.
Yeah. I got the place. You guys need to make it happen.
There you go. No, I think that's amazing. I the thing that I look back on from residency, and what I think a lot of my friends look at it is we put our head down. We wanted to get through residency so we can become attendings or EMS fellows or whatever it be. And then we look back and we go, well, what are we going to do now? And
thankfully, obedience, right? It's like, don't make any waves. Stay under the radar. Don't make eye contact. You'll get in trouble, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm sure Layla and John, you guys probably sometimes think the same thing too. You go, let me just get through this, and I'll get through this day. I'll get through this week. I'll get through this month.
That's all you can do as a resident. You just got to do it. Just trudge. Yeah.
Just make it through the rotation.
Yeah. But when you get out, don't be so damned obedient. Open up your mind and remember who you are and do your thing.
There you go. Where do people fly into if they wanted to go there?
There's two. There's Seattle, SeaTac is 2 hours and 20 minutes. And Portland is also 2 hours and 20 minutes. So either one of those major airports. And then if somebody wants to fly to Yakima, it's an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
So okay. It's remote, but it's not horribly remote. And the drive from the airport, it's not bad.
I think we touched on a good number of different things. And I truly, truly thank you for your time. Thank you, John and Layla, as well, for joining us. Just to recap a little bit, you know, obviously we talked at a number of different things. We went on some fantastic opioid and narcotic guideline discussion as well. I actually really think it leads to wellness. So some of the things I think we discussed is come together as a group, either amongst your own colleagues, amongst EM docs on Facebook, or across the country, across the nations. And I think if we support each other, it's going to really make a difference. And I've definitely seen that on the EM docs Facebook group. I've definitely seen people post stories or thoughts or ideas of hard times, and they've gotten relief from just sharing their story. And it really makes a difference. And I'm truly thankful for you for doing that. Along the guidelines of doing opioid and narcotic prescription, if you're interested, look at the CDC and the ASAP website for some guidelines, and bring that to your administration and see if we can make that a better process so that we can provide our patients better care. And on the flip side, make ourselves feel a little bit better, not only about what we're doing, but hopefully our patient interactions and our own wellness. And lastly, let's all go to the wellness ranch.
See you there. And I made sure that it was super cheap for residents.
There you go. So residents, get in now if you can.
Oh, yeah, because it'll be more later. When you're an attending, then you have the attending rate.
Exactly. Thank you so much, John or Layla. Would you guys like to add anything?
Other than getting involved and enrolled in one way, it sounds like a massive project. Is there any way residents could help in any way to make this reality?
Oh, just come on over. Really, more than anything, just show up and be together. I mean, that's the whole idea. Like I said, this is going to be a joint project, an ongoing work in progress, and I'm open to whatever ideas you guys have for the residents.
I wanted to pick your brain for a second, actually. We just got approval to start our first wellness committee at McMaster. So, you know, lots of thoughts coming in mind about what our goals are, what we want to do. Do you have any thoughts, you know, with all of your experience on what realistic goals we should be keeping in mind as we're starting out?
That is fantastic. If I were you, I would look on Medscape. They have, or I can even send you the specific slide that has a list of the top things that are the most frustrating for ER doctors. I mean, I know you know it, but at least if you have that survey, then you have a starting point to show the folks that are funding this to say, okay, you know, the things that are frustrating us the most are our EMRs, are too many administrative tasks, difficult patients. I mean, there's this whole list, and you could just start to pick it off the list one at a time, and you could start addressing the things that are the most stressful for us. The biggest thing is feeling supported, honestly, and supporting each other, supporting our colleagues, but also feeling that the administration has your back. Because there's nothing more stressful when a patient is yelling at you for whatever reason, they came in with certain expectations and you're not meeting those expectations. If you know that your administrators have your back, you can stand strong and do the right thing for that patient a lot more easily, and your heart's not pounding quite as hard as if you know the patient is mad at me and I'm going to get a nasty email on Monday morning because this patient complained and the administrators always take the patient's side. So if there's things in place, kind of like the opioid guidelines, well, if there's guidelines, I went by the guidelines, and so I'm not going to get in trouble. And then you have that comfort to know that, okay, yes, this patient's threatening to kill me. I'll watch my back in the parking lot, but at least I know I'm not going to get fired for this or in trouble on Monday.
Yeah, we're very lucky, actually. We have a really great program director and such wonderful administration actually helping push us along to get this committee on the roll. But those are great suggestions. I'll definitely take a look at that and bring that forward.
Yeah, that makes all the difference in the world. I've worked at, you know, different places, and the places that I've worked right now, I have a really wonderful medical director, and I know when a patient is yelling at me that she's not going to throw me under the bus. I think that's one of the biggest things, supporting one another, knowing administration is going to support you, and then also finding times that you can get together outside the ED for social events.
Well, thank you, everybody, so very much. And KK, thank you again so very much as well for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Thank you again.
And that wraps up a great episode from the Wellness Think Tank. Special thanks to our exclusive sponsors, US Acute Care Solutions. You can reach us also on Twitter at WellnessTT. Until next time, remember that residency training should be about thriving and not just surviving.